for joining me for the latest installment of TV Madness with Makisha Madden-Toby. I'm your host. The Walking Dead is one of TV's hottest shows, with the season 3 premiere recently pulling in nearly 11 million viewers. I got a chance to interview Andrew Lincoln and Sarah Wayne Callies during a roundtable just before the start of season 3 to talk about their characters Rick and Lori, and their crumbling marriage and what happens next. The Walking Dead airs 9 p.m. Sundays on AMC. Check it out.
Voices are going, I'm sorry.
So I think most of us have seen the first two episodes.
Two, yeah.
Thumbs up.
Yes.
Well, we haven't, for what it's worth.
Oh, okay. They're
really good.
We haven't seen them. Yeah. Just so you know, we haven't seen them.
The scene with you guys.
Yeah.
We haven't seen them. No, we made the cut!
So I guess obviously, can you start talking about, you know, where you guys, where your characters are, the relationship? Because it definitely is a little stressed still, even though she's very close to having your baby.
Yeah,
or
no.
A baby.
Yeah.
A baby.
A baby.
And that's why things between us are not
great.
I had to bring it up.
Notgreat.com. Yeah. As you know, we jump forward in time, I think, which is a great thing because it puts this time bomb. In
just call me a time bomb.
No, my son, a time bomb, or daughter,
or daughter, never know.
We're in the worst place we've been. I think it's pre-apocalypse. I think it's caused this possibly irrevocable rift between the two of them. Although there is some movement, certainly in the first few episodes, that they're trying to, for the sake of the group and themselves, you know, heal this rift.
It's a situation I don't think they would ever try and recover from were it not for the fact that it's the end of the world and everyone else they know is dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there was one of the things last season, people were always asking, you know, why doesn't Lori just sort of kick Shane out of the group? And my answer was always, well, there are only three people alive who knew her 6 weeks ago. That, you can't overestimate the power of that. Well, now Shane's gone, and
yeah.
Rick and Lori, you know, we grew up together. We've been together since high school, and so I think whereas were it not for the end of the world,
yeah,
we would just go our separate ways and go, there's been too much pain, there's too much loss.
Yeah.
At this point, you sort of go, I can't bring myself to leave. I can't bring myself to look at you. I don't know where that leaves us. And we've been, I think, festering in that.
We made a conscious decision not to make eye contact.
Yeah.
Just because every time we look at each other, it burns.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With guilt and shame of what's happened. And it is. It's. I agree with all of that. I think it is. It's. It's that thing of having history. That's the thing. The Road was the important book for this season. Last season it was Lonesome Dove for me, but this one it was The Road. And there's a beautiful thing. They're starting to forget the past, like that words mean less, and that's why holding on to your history means everything in this apocalypse, I think. And I absolutely agree. I think they have to make it work, you know.
Andrew,
what I think is interesting is that what's gone wrong between them is not that I told him to watch his back and he killed Shane.
Mm.
I think we were both very clearly on the same page that that happened and that had to happen, and that, you know, in some ways, that was a big success, right? I warned my husband that someone was going to try and kill him.
Yeah.
Tried to kill him, and the right man came out of the fight. But then he tells me I wanted him dead.
Yeah.
And I recoil from him instead of embracing him and making him feel safe. And that's one of the things I love about the way this marriage has been written.
Yeah.
This is not a couple that's pissed off because she had an affair and he killed the guy.
Yeah.
Whatever. That's the obvious version, right? This is a couple that's heartbroken because she's afraid
of who he's turning in. Yeah.
That he has turned into Shane by killing him.
Yeah.
And he needed her in that moment to just say, you're a good man.
Yeah.
I forgive you and I love you. And she instead backed off. And when we shot at us, spat in his face, but they cut that.
Yeah, they didn't go for that.
They didn't go for that. Just
too
bad.
That's why I don't watch it. So I wanted the spit version.
I know, me too.
Andrew,
sorry, you were
saying? Yeah, I was going to ask, is the strength of this show that it goes against conventional TV thinking? Because most TV, you start out the good guy, you're not going to do, the guy does good things. Your character's really kind of almost done maybe 179 degree turn. There's still a little movement there. But is that the strength of the show, that nobody stays the same?
I don't know. I think, I mean, I That was one of the things that attracted me to the role, is the fact that he goes on this extraordinary journey, this deterioration or this huge change because of the environment, because of everything that happens to him. That was a huge attraction to why I wanted to play the role. But I think it's just all of the characters. It's not just him. I love these. It's always that thing, how do you try and describe something that is this? You know what I mean? Everybody's trying to, what is it? What's the alchemy? And I really wish I knew, but all I know is that when we film it, it's the same crew that have worked on it all 3 years. They are magnificent. And they care about this beyond, everybody is a huge fan. They get the scripts, they peel them open just as voraciously as we do. They can't wait. They want to tell this really great story with these amazingly complicated but true characters. That's the bit that it reminds me, I was just talking about, it reminds me of an old West, it reminds me of the Magnificent Seven. It's got those kind of old ideas and old moral
archetypes.
Yeah, archetypes yeah. within it. But then they invert it, like you say. They go against the norm. And it's, I suppose if you're doing serialized TV, you want to keep surprising the audience. And I know that they sit in the writer's room going, what do we do next?
Well, and I think it is a part of what works on our show, but it's also, it's more than just our show. I mean, you know, I was watching the Emmys the other night, and people keep talking about this golden age of television, and I think what serialized cable dramas have given us is the opportunity to not simply tell the same story with slightly different words and different costumes every week. Mm-hmm. But, you know, think about something like Breaking Bad. I mean, the evolution of that character is enormous. Something like Mad Men, the evolution of that character. I mean, what's happening in television right now is I think people are really mining the ability of storytellers to tell a long-form story that goes from A to Z, and to trust that an audience will follow that. Because if they miss it over the course of the week, they can watch it online, they can buy the DVD. You know, there's so many different ways of interacting with it. That storytelling in television is getting more complex and more nuanced.
I think it's right. And you reward the audience by laying something in the first season that you can reveal in the third season. Mm-hmm. And people go, oh, because of da-da-da.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's a beautiful thing. As a writer, I would go, yeah, what a great opportunity.
Yeah.
To be a new writer comes onto a show, watches and goes, I want to do the payoff for that.
Yeah,
that happened in episode two. You know,
you mentioned how, you know, she did recoil at that initial discovery about Shane, and now as we've seen the new season, you know, he's going even further with what he does in the second episode. You know, killing that guy, letting that other guy die. You know, I don't think she doesn't see any of that stuff directly, but you know, is it just
But she said something to me.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I say do
she
what
gave,
you've got to do.
She said consent.
So do you think she really believes that, or is she, you know, just trying to make it work?
I think what Lori's very clear on is that her husband is the right man to lead them.
Mm-hmm.
And that whatever he needs from her to be a better leader is what she will give him. So I think it's less about, I mean, she saw in season two and in season one, there was a lot of, I don't know if this is the right call, I think you should stay here, I think, you know, and what I saw was that discordance between us caused him to second guess himself, and there were a lot of challenges there, and I think she's taking a new tack, which is not stand by your man no matter what, but to trust the man. And so trust him to handle the individual decisions and not get too involved in the minutiae of it. It's also, I think they've divided this world. And she's saying, you handle what's out there. I will handle what's in here.
But that's the beautiful thing, is that you don't want to be a burden at any cost. That was it's a great thing. You know, she's got a baby. This is the worst pressure that we can possibly have. But Sarah made this fantastic choice as an actress to say, nothing, I'm going to put no burden on you. You're going to get none of that. There's going to be no... Because she knows how fucked we are. You know what I mean? that this has got to be, this is
and
such
the burden
an important
you've put on yourself.
That's it. He does
yeah.
it himself.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. He's Job, this dude. I mean,
yeah.
and he's testing himself. He's nothing. That's the difference, the fundamental difference, I think, between him and the governor is the burden of responsibility and guilt that he carries. And I'm not sure that the governor, I wouldn't want to speak for another actor, but I'm not sure that he carries that. I think he sees the world for what it is. It's more of a nihilistic kind of view.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he just says, this is the new world now. And he's able to detach himself from it. I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
Everything costs
mm-hmm.
this guy. And she realizes that. And it's an incredibly generous thing to do after all this, to go, just look, I trust.
Do
it's fine. It's all taken care of. You just do what you need to do. Make us safe.
Can we talk about that? Oh, sorry. You want to go ahead?
Oh, I was going to say, you know, you guys are talking about the baby, but you have a son, Carl, who actually could have saved Dale's life if he had killed that walker instead of playing around with him. He was able to tell Shane that he hasn't really come to you guys. So how is the dynamic with the son that you do have going to be this season? I mean, he must be feeling some guilt, but he's also trying to grow up.
Mm, his story is the story I'm most fascinated by this year.
It's complicated.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think Carl is probably the most affected by the rift between Rick and Lori, out of everyone else. There's something, Mazara and I were talking about this actually before the season started. Children are so adaptable, and they really can adapt themselves to almost any circumstance except for the divorce of their parents or the death of a parent. And there's something, I think, to be said for the fact that nothing that has happened, killing Shane as a zombie, feeling responsible for Dale's death, seeing Sophia die, that nothing has been harder on Carl than seeing his parents effectively separate, which is more or less what's happened.
Yeah.
And I think his journey this season is a very, very complicated one.
Mm.
Because whether Rick can ever bring himself to forgive Lori, and Lori Rick, those are mature questions. Carl is handling them as a boy soldier who has one little box for his emotions that he shoves them into and slams the lid on and then arms himself to deal with this world. And Chandler does it beautifully.
Yeah,
the level of nuance.
Out for the kid this season.
Oh my lord.
He is amazing.
The level of nuance in his work is...
I'm convinced
terrifying.
He's a 48-year-old.
Yeah, I think he's just a very small
adult.
Or smaller. I mean, he's also getting bigger.
First season,
I had my arm around him.
Yeah.
And second season, I had my arm on his shoulder. And
it was boy season four.
Too. He's going to have his arm around my shoulder.
Yeah.
It's true.
There's this Freudian thing that happens, especially I feel in the second episode, where it's like mom and dad are fighting again, and you were talking about the scene where she gives him permission, and you say, "You sure?" Because last time, and I'm like, "Oh snap, Rick!
Still there? And
then at the last scene in the second episode was so touching and so heartbreaking. Can you talk about that? Like
that's the first time we talked.
When you finally talk, that's when you put your hand on my shoulder.
Touch her. It's the embrace.
Yeah.
That's what we wanted that to be, that be.
Yeah.
And it's the beginning. The tentative is the most that can happen.
It's the beginning of hope that
something
could almost begin to...
And they still can't look at each other, but it's that. Thank you for doing, you know. It's a beautiful scene. It's a very simple scene, but there was just a little bit of air. You know, in the world, you know.
Well, and you know, I mean, what I love about these two, they love each other at a cellular level.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true.
Lori does not know who she would be without Rick in her life, and at a certain level, everything they're doing for a lot of reasons. But at a certain level, everything they're doing for each other. I worked that hard to save Herschel because I don't want to think about what happens to Rick if
he loses
Herschel. I don't want to think of what that will do to him. He finds the prison so that I don't have to worry about that baby. And it's this sort of weird gift of the magi thing between the two of them. I can't look at you. I can't talk to you. I'm so ashamed. I'm so heartbroken.
But I'm giving you everything I've got.
But yeah, I will kill myself to make sure that you don't have to be in pain. And it's I just love, I so want a happy ending for them. Like,
I know.
I want this series to end with the two of them in the back of a convertible, like, off to the Bahamas. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen. Rainbows and ponies.
Yeah.
And, like,
do you think everything you just said, this connection, do you think that's what's kept them and everybody else sane? Because I was just watching these two episodes going, like, how are these people not in the corner just blah, 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 blah. the stuff that they've dealt with that you can never be prepared for.
No, well, it's
yeah,
also,
so
I read The Things They Carried, you know the book, The Things They Carried?
No.
And it's a brilliant novel, but about war, about the Vietnam War. Patrick O'Brien, I think it is.
Yeah.
And Pat O'Brien, and it's magnificent because it's exactly what this feels like. Everybody hasn't got time to process what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that there will come a time where they will have to deal with the shockwave of this, the trauma, the daily trauma that they live through.
I mean, let me put it this way. If the prison was perfectly safe, and we closed the doors, there was a 10-year supply of food, and we grew gardens and everything was fine. Unicorns and ponies running through the halls.
Mm-hmm.
These people would still have ahead of them a long road of pain and healing and grief that they haven't even scratched the surface of because they haven't slept two nights in the same place in, you know, 6 months or 8 months or something. And so when you layer on top of that, da-da-da-da, here comes the governor, you know, things just keep getting thicker and thicker.
Can you talk a little bit about the governor? You mentioned a little bit about him. We've seen a lot, you know, because the first two seasons obviously showed Shane versus Rick and their different philosophies. Now the governor comes in and he's also obviously a leader of people. You know, how similar, not similar, you know, how quickly are he and Rick butting heads, or do they have some...
We're not allowed to say, unfortunately, those are all valid, very good questions.
Yeah.
But we will be shocked if we have we answer them.
Can you talk about it from the standpoint of this season? The enemy is not just the walkers. That there's also human conflict.
I think that's right. I think that's very much the excitement. I think for season three is that it really is. I suppose last season was the enemy within the group, and now this is the new enemy outside. And it's certainly a way of opening out the story, which is magnificent, I think, and it gives a broader landscape for us to tell bigger stories, I think, just because, as we've said before, they've had time to, that other civilization has had time to process things a little bit. They're further down the line somewhat, and so they have different issues, and they have different needs. We're still very much hand-to-mouth. We're like drowning rats still.
Mm-hmm. Things have gotten worse for us, if anything.
Yeah.
Since Herschel's
time. Yeah, absolutely. So I think we are. I mean, it's just... I'm very interested to see how those two worlds play out. I'm not answering your question.
What you kind of get, I think, which is interesting, is... I mean, the first two seasons, you have this sort of battle between Rick and Shane and which vision is going to work and which man is going to prevail. And I think, in a way, what you get with the governor is... two fully matured visions, two leaders who've enacted their policies and the cultures that they've created. And so it's a similar kind of theme from Rick and Shane, but instead what you get is, you know, if Shane had gone off and had his own culture and been fully armed and gone to do whatever he wanted to do, maybe a few months later it would be like this when those two meet. And that's an interesting way to...
Yeah.
You mentioned that the words mean less in this world now. I think that was really, I think, captured in the opening sequence in those first 4 minutes of the third opening episode of season three,
mm-hmm.
where there's no one talks. And it's just great. It's
yeah.
so brilliantly
mm-hmm.
executed. Can you, how hard was that to shoot? Like, I wanted somebody to sneeze, cough. But it was just
like...
Me.
That's why we didn't sneeze or cough. I don't think words mean less. I think that if we just fearful of saying... Yeah, I mean, I just think our world has become more silent. And I think it's a terrifying thing. You know, that's by necessity. We have... Everything has been... We've become this telepathic group, this family's tight group, because we've had to. Become one organism, otherwise we die. you know, or we weaken, you know. And I think that that's the, just talking about the two different dynamics of leadership. Rick will always, you know, be as strong as his weakest link. You know, that's who he is. It, and equally, in one of his greatest strengths is his family and the driving force of his family, but it's his greatest weakness as well.
Hmm. Have you ever find out who's in the helicopter?
And also, for what it's worth, briefly, I think it's actually a device that harkens back to the pilot. And the pilot had swaths of silence. And I think the danger with a show like this is you get lost in the guns and the zombies and the blah, 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 blah. And I think having those moments, having those scenes and those teasers,
they're
and
more
ads,
unnerving than anything.
It's
horrifying.
There's
it's
an episode
really
that we've just shot, and I can't tell you which one it is, but it's it's absolutely magnificent because of the tone, the change in tone, and it's very much like the pilot, and it was so exciting to do because it just was so familiar. I went, oh yes, and we get the opportunity to just go boom somewhere else in this show.
You have to do that every night.
You have to change
it
up.
You have to carve out
those
moments of silence. Sorry, what?
Are we ever going to find out who was in the helicopter that brought the walkers?
Well, maybe no.
Maybe this season? Maybe this season?
maybe.
I'm not saying a word.
The show has, it has a lot of big gory moments, and you know, zombies getting stabbed and decapitated. There was two moments that really stood out to me in the pilot, though, because your characters usually are just you're killing zombies and have to move on. But Maggie stabbing that zombie and saying, "Did you see that?" And then you cutting off Herschel's leg, but you have that moment of going, "Oh!" right after. It's nice for you to get to as the character. Kind of express that in the middle of so much, you know.
Natural.
Did I do it like that?
I don't know. I feel like I didn't give it the nuances either.
You
did. But to get the play that you just cut your friend's leg off, that you could have a human moment like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a radically different experience to killing a zombie because, you're trying to save a man's life. And Scott was there. And I remember we'd done a 13-hour day, and my wife was saying, stay in Peachtree City, which is very close, rather than drive back home to Atlanta. And I said, yeah, I will. And then I chopped his leg off. And I couldn't sleep for 3 hours. So I drove home. And my wife's like, I was full with blood, and I was completely shell-shocked. Scott was looking at me like, because he was there, obviously, and it was his prosthetic, and he was wailing, and all the rest of it, he looked at me and went, and the crew were just like, where have you gone? You know, because it was so intense.
You've gone down a few dark holes this season.
I've been punished this season more than I should never go.
But you've
had
more days off than you ever
had
before.
True.
Thank you.
Thank you, David Morrissey. Yeah.
That's good.
I think that.
All right.
Thank you guys.
Thank you so much.
That was awesome. I love Andrew Lincoln, and I love Sarah Wayne Callies, and I think fans should give her credit for, you know, sort of explaining where Laurie was coming from. She didn't have to, but I mean, hopefully now that you guys will, you know, lay off a little bit on her on the interwebs and not give her such a hard time. Laurie's, you know, coming into her own, and Sarah Wayne Callies is a great actress. Thank you so much for listening. I have to thank NPR West, our sponsor, Santa Monica's The Last Record Store. Visit recordsurplusla.com. Theo, you are the best. You are so awesome. Production assistant, Adam Janice, you are the best. Thanks for listening, everybody.